I thank you all for coming out. And tonight we begin a new series. We had a chance before Yom Tov to have a very brief series learning Yonah together. And tonight we begin a series of seven Shi'urim that will take us from here until Hanukkah, exploring Sefer Daniel, a Sefer that we all know something about, and at the same time, a lot of those stories are sort of, we've all heard of the writing on the wall, and we've all heard of the Daniel and the Gov Arayos story thrown into lion's pit, but there's what hearing something about it is one thing, actually learning about it hopefully will be a whole new experience. And the title for the series as a whole is Living in Galus, Dreaming of Geula. The last six prakim, the 12 prakim altogether in Daniel. The second set, the second half, the final six prakim are Daniel's nevuos. Many of his nevuos are about the future of a Klal Yisrael, and hopefully when we get to Hanukkah time at the end of the series, we'll have a chance to focus on that latter half, and particularly on the Hanukkah aspects of what Daniel's visions of Geula and visions of the future of Klal Yisrael are. Thank you so much. If you don't have a Sefer Daniel, feel free to help yourself. Okay. Often the case. Our focus for the first 6 years will be on the first six prakim. The six prakim that tell the stories of Daniel and his friends, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, and their stories of Galus. You know, when you think about Galus, is certainly a major theme, by far not the only theme, but certainly Galus is one of the significant themes in Tanakh. And when you think about the different flavors of how different Sifrei Tanakh treat Galus, I think there are three different flavors, or three different postures. One major focus is the number of Sifrei Tanakh that look at the causes of Galus, how to avert Galus. Much of Nevi'im Achronim, and Nevi'im are telling Klal Yisrael, you're doing this chet, you're doing that chet, you got to do tshuva. If you don't do tshuva, Galus is on the way. So sort of looking ahead towards Galus and trying to figure out what its causes are and how to avert it. And then the second posture is Galus has arrived and we're being misabel over the Galus. Certainly that comes to its height in the Galus Eicha, which is all about avelus over the Churban. And then, in addition to pre-Churban, causes averting, and during Churban, avelus, there's post-Churban. There's living in, contending with, living in, operating in Galus. And we're going to see that Daniel is firmly in the third category. It's not about figuring out how we got here or why we got here. And it's not about crying over the Churban. Those have their place. But Daniel is about living with Galus. Living with Galus and moving forward. Moving forward in Galus as a Jew who is close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's really going to be our primary focus, will be the first half of Daniel, the living in Galus, these first six prakim, and we'll have a chance to learn the psukim together, and hopefully to draw on, over the course of these chaburas, to draw on comments of some of the Rishonim, to draw on insights of the Malbim, and to draw on some of the insights of Rav Yigal Ariel. He's a Talmud Chacham of note from the Golan. He lives in Nov, he teaches in Chespin. He has a series of Sfarim on Sifrei Tanakh and on Agarata, one of which is Mor v'Hadas on Daniel and Esther. Very, very fascinating. Very Malbim-like in many ways. A focus on Pshat and the themes of the Psukim, the Ruach HaChazal. Just to lay out context for a moment, just to sort of set the backdrop, the historical backdrop, because Daniel opens Bishna Shalosh Malchus Yehoyakim, is in the third year of the reign of Yehoyakim, who was the king of Yehuda, one of the final kings of Yehuda. Nebuchadnezzar comes and attacks Yerushalayim, and we see Galus begin to unfold. So just a little bit of how we got here. This is at the end of approximately 400 years, more than 400 years of Malchus Yehuda, going back to the days of David HaMelech. And you'll remember that David and his son Shlomo were reigned over the united kingdom of all 12 Shvatim, all of Klal Yisrael were a single political entity. And the Navi had told Shlomo that that would not persist because of his chataim. His son Rechavam would only become king over the southern kingdom, over Malchus Yehuda, but the majority of the Shvatim in the north, Malchus Yisrael, would have would be a separate country with a separate king. And indeed, Rechavam is the next Melech Yehuda, and Yeravam ben Nevat is the first Melech Yisrael. Over the course of Sefer Malachim, the psukim take you back and forth, watching how things evolve, king after king after king in the north and south. The psukim keep split screening between the north and the south. Here's the king, and next Melech Yisrael, the next Melech Yehuda, until finally, after several centuries, you see a series of superpowers that from areas that surround Eretz Yisrael, both from the northeast and from the southwest, begin to encroach. And we see the rise of Ashur. We saw the precursors of Ashur where we learned Yonah. And we see the rise of Ashur, and Ashur continues to grow its empire and grow its power, ultimately lays waste and captures the northern kingdom. That's the end of the Aseres HaShvatim, and even significantly weakens the southern kingdom, Malchus Yehuda. And at one point, Malchus Yehuda is really limited to the Yerushalayim and the area around Yerushalayim. That's in the days of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, but the Navi Yishayahu tells Chizkiyahu, you're going to persist, you're going to endure, and indeed they do. Three generations later, Chizkiyahu's great-grandson, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, is the last truly sovereign king of the Jewish people. And under Yoshiyahu HaMelech, the Jewish people enjoy sovereignty for the last time until the middle of the Bayit Sheni period under the Hashmonaim. Because after the death of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, the remaining kings of Yehuda are his sons and grandsons, a succession of them, but none of them are really sovereign kings. They end up being puppets. They're controlled by either the north or the south, either Ashur or Babel in the north or Mitzrayim in the south. The last real sovereignty is under Yoshiyahu HaMelech. So we're already in this phase. We're in this phase, and as a matter of fact, the Rashi points out that the opening phrase captures this, because Bishna Shalosh Malchus Yoyakim Melech Yehuda, an innocent sounding phrase, it's year 3 of the reign of Yehoyakim, one of the sons of Yoshiyahu, Nebuchadnezzar shows up, Yotzar Aleha, and he sets siege to Yerushalayim. And the opening Rashi, he wonders, but elsewhere the Tanakh tells us that Nebuchadnezzar only began his reign in the fourth year of King Yoyakim. The third year of King Yoakim, Nebuchadnezzar isn't even emperor of Babel yet. So how is he already showing up? And Rashi quotes a comment of Chazal that it doesn't mean the third year that Yoakim was king. It's the third year of Yoakim's independence. Yoakim being king, Nebuchadnezzar had come and imposed his will upon Yoakim. And Yoakim had been paying tribute, essentially been a province of Babel for a couple of years. And then after a number of years, Yoakim decides he's had enough and he rebels. And he declares his independence. And it's in year 3 of his merida, it's in year 3 of his rebellion, Nebuchadnezzar shows up and says, this is all over, and I'm in charge. And he deposes Yehoyakim, brings in Yechaniah, establishes Yechaniah as the next king, and Yechaniah doesn't last very long either. He moves to Tzidkiyahu HaMelech. Tzidkiyahu HaMelech will be king for a while, and it's at the end of the reign of Tzidkiyahu that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. But there's already a galus that we learn about, we're familiar from Esther and from these psukim, that the galus Yechaniah, Yehoyakim is done, Yechaniah lasts very briefly, and then Nebuchadnezzar begins the process of galus. And that's what happens in Pasuk Beis. Vayitein Hashem biyadoos Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Nebuchadnezzar succeeds because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has made the decision. Here we hear the echoes of the Nevi'im Achronim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the politics are driven by Yad Hashem. We did Chataim, as a result there's Galus, and Nebuchadnezzar is carrying out a Gezeras Hashem. And the language is fascinating. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Nebuchadnezzar power over Yehoyakim, u'miktsas kalei Beis HaElokim. Some of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. Some of the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash. And some of the people, in Pasuk Gimel. They bring some of the Jews down to up north to Eretz Yisrael, north to Eretz Bavel. We hear about that. Mordechai is part of Golos Yechaniah. And so are a number of children. And here, As Galus is beginning, Daniel and his chaverim, whom we're about to meet, are ground zero. They are in Galus from the very beginning. They are in Galus from the very beginning. And Nebuchadnezzar has a fascinating request. Nebuchadnezzar turns to one of his people, to Ashpenaz, his chief of staff, and he tells him in Pasuk Gimel, La'aviv b'nei Yisrael mizera ha'melucha min apartamim. He wants to take some of the golem and bring them into the palace. Yuladim asherim behem kolmum tovei mar'eh. They're physically whole and healthy, and they are mentally very capable. Maskilim b'kol chachma. And you're going to find perfect children, and they're going to be trained. Asher behem koach behem lamod beheichal hamelech. L'lamdam sefer. L'shon kastim. He tells that he tasks Ashpenaz with finding a couple of young Jewish boys from this first wave of Galus, from Eretz Yehuda to Bavel, and bring them into the palace, and we're going to train them. And the king, apparently, Pasuk K, is very hands-on. The king himself, sounds like he's personally involved in setting the menu. He decides what they're going to be eating. He said something in terms of what they're going to be drinking. Ulagadlam shanim shalosh. We give them 3 years to grow up, to mature, to be trained in the palace. Umiktsasam yamdu lefnei hamelach. And when those 3 years are up, they're going to appear before the king. This whole cadre, this whole cohort of boys who are being trained, or being fed, or being raised for service of the king. And after 3 years, the king is going to check them out, is going to assess them, and will pick who's going to work in the palace. Fascinating. And the psukim tell us, so among this group, many anonymous members of the group, four whose names we know, the four who will be the focus of the next six brachim. Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah. They get Babylonian names, and then a fascinating story that we have to figure out together. The central story, up until now, we've sort of been laying the background. It's the beginning of Galus, the first wave of Golem from Eretz Yehuda to Bavel, including this group of children who are taken into the palace of the king, and the king wants to train them and make them part of the palace apparatus. And some of them after 3 years are gonna pass a qualifying exam, and they're gonna work in the palace. And here starts the central story. Let's take a look at the psukim together, and this is something that's curious. But Yosem Daniel Alibo, Daniel notices that, and he's very concerned. Sima slave, he's very concerned that in Pasuk, we learned that Nebuchadnezzar was going to plan their menu. Nebuchadnezzar is planning the curriculum, and Nebuchadnezzar is also planning their menu. He's taking care of them mentally, he's taking care of them physically. Daniel will have none of it. Pas bag hamelach, yein mishtav, he doesn't want any of this. So Daniel doesn't want to be, he doesn't want to be dirtied, contaminated by the king's food, by the king's wine. And so he tries twice to get out of this. He doesn't want to eat the non-kosher food. So he tries twice to skirt the issue, to somehow avoid eating non-kosher food. And if you think about Daniel, is one of the first figures whom we see living in Galus. So one of the first issues he contends with is kashrus, which is something that has been a theme throughout. Right? You're working for the king, and you're operating in this non-Jewish context, and what am I going to do about the food? What am I going to do about the drinks? I don't want to drink wine. I don't want to drink the king's wine. I don't want to eat the king's food. And he tries twice. The first time he's unsuccessful. The second time he is successful. Let's take a look at the psukim together and try to figure out why did it not work the first time? It did work the second time. There are some funny dynamics we got to think about. The first time around is psukim, tes, and yud. The second attempt begins in pasuk yud alef. Let's take a look. Vayitena elokim is Daniel. Excuse me, in pasuk ches. Vayivakesh misara sarisim asher lo yizgal. He speaks to the to Ashpenaz, the man who was in charge, the chief of staff. And he says, I don't want to eat this. I don't want to be contaminated. How do you think Ashpenaz would respond to that type of request? I don't want to be contaminated by your food.
Not
well. No, you would think it would be off with his head. I mean, the king, in his great mercy, the king is bestowing you with the opportunity to eat of his food.
Privilege,
exactly. You don't want to be contaminated by the king's food. Who do you think you are, you little boy? So, Vayitena Elokim is Daniel lechesel rachamim. Kadosh Baruch Hu gives Daniel a great chesed, a great rachamim. And the Sarah Sarisim says to him, with incredible honesty, Yarei ani es Adoni HaMelech. Ashpenaz says to this little boy Daniel, you know, you're asking me if I can switch your food. I'm too scared to do it. That's a remarkable thing. That's a remarkable thing. I'm too scared. The king, he personally decides what you're eating, what you're drinking. The king set the menu. I'm going to switch it up. Why should the king see that your faces are drawn, that you're less healthy than the other, than your peers? The other ones who are the same age as you, they're living otherwise the same lifestyle that you are. They're getting the same training, but you're going to look drawn and you're going to look sallow. You're going to look unhealthy because you're not eating the food that they're eating. You know, the king will have my head. It's a remarkable type of response. He doesn't get what he wants. He got a no. But he did get a very polite no. And Malvin points out that the Pasuk Tes, in between Daniel's request in Pasuk Ches and the Sarai Ashpenaz's response in Pasuk Yud, we heard about HaKadosh Baruch Hu giving Daniel Chesed and Rachamim. Chesed and Rachamim. Those two elements were what saved him. The chesed was that, and the Malm understands, the chesed is that Ashpenaz didn't remove his head. And the rachamim is not only did he let it slide, but his response was incredibly personal. He actually was very honest. It's like, I'd be glad to help you, but I can't. And if you notice, there are two reasons why he can't. He says he can't because I can't violate the king's process, and because I'm worried about the product. Is, even if we could get away with ignoring the king's instructions, in 3 years from now you're going to be assessed, and ultimately I'm the vice president who's responsible for what happens. So they're going to come back to me. And then Daniel tries again. What's interesting is he doesn't try again with the Saras Harisim, right? Sure, you would think he would, you know, let's go talk to the Saras Harisim again. So he got a pretty good response. He was open. He was empathetic. But no. But Yomer Daniel, attempt number two in Pasuk Yud Aleph, who does he ask? Yeah. Hashem Mino Sarisim. Now he goes to the kitchen staff. They had been appointed by the Ashpenaz. He doesn't go back to Ashpenaz again. At first he started with management. And now he tried with management, and they were very polite, but they sort of kicked the can down the road. So now he goes to the waiter. He goes to the kitchen staff. There were tens, if not hundreds, of waiters. Those particular meltzer are Shermi No Sarah Sarisim Al Daniel Chanan Mishal Vazaria. That's going to one of 100 guys working in the kitchen. The one who, this one fellow is in charge of a couple of the golem, and Daniel is in that group. Yeah, goes to him. Why do you think that is? Why did he go to the Meltzer? And why did he go to the Meltzer originally? Yeah, what do you say?
I suggest that he got a lot of information from the first guy. And what he found out from him is that it's not only that they need to be sustained, but they need to be sustained in a certain way. So to be able to appear healthy at the end of this 3-year period, perhaps the waiter, he could arrange alternate foods that might allow them to. Now he understands what the end game is, so now he can work with the person who delivers the food to help them
to address something, to build something that will work. Yeah, and let's see what he says. The working off of your insight, what does he say? Think about, you know, we heard in Pasuk Ches, the presentation of Sarah Sarisim was the Shalayuz Gaal. I don't want to be contaminated. the presentation to the Meltzer in Parsha Yud Beis, he proposes an experiment. Nasna. In this week's Parsha, you have Elkim Nisa in the sense of Nisayon, but here it's in Nisayon in the sense of an experiment, a Nisui. Nasna Savodecha Yabim Asar. Let's try a 10-day experiment, a 10-day challenge, a 10-day fitness challenge. Yinu Lanu Min Hazero Im, Venochla Mayim Venishta. Give me some vegetables, give us some water. And what's the experiment? After 10 days, we'll go head to head with all the kids who are eating the treif food. And the Meltzer agrees to the experiment, and in Pasuk Tezvav, the experiment is a resounding success. Daniel, Michal, Mishal, Azariah, they look better. They look better than anyone else. They look better than anyone else. So what changed? So number one, as Alyssa was saying, well, Daniel got a sense of what management wanted, and then he builds something that's going to work. And he never has a discussion with the Meltzer about sort of the big picture stuff. And he doesn't say, there's no discussion on Shelo Yiz Gaal, no discussion about being contaminated. And it's very practical. And as a matter of fact, the waiter has his own angle, because what happened to the food? Pasuk Tezayin, he had Meltzer no say as pas bagam v'yei mishtayim. The waiter, he pocketed the food. He was giving them peppers, he was giving them vegetables and water, and all the meat and wine he was taking home and sharing with his own family. So the Meltzer has his own angle. So on one level, as you're saying, what's going on is first he has sort of the formal discussion about vision and the big picture with management, and then he gets practical and has a man-to-man conversation with the guy working in the kitchen. And there may be something else also. The fact that he, the first time around, he says, Shelo Yiz Gaal, and the second time he doesn't. So the Malbim suggests, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a nace. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Daniel's head. Forget about the fact that he got the rachamim of the Ashpenaz even being empathetic. He got the chesed that Ashpenaz didn't execute on the spot. The chutzpah. Hashem Yizkah. How do you talk about the machal hamelach that way? The Malbim suggests, and the terminology Hashem Yizkah, very strong, that could be contaminated. So the Malbim suggests, Daniel may have. And why was Daniel was risking his life to avoid eating treif for food? Does that even fit halachically? The choice is to eat the treif for food, or you may lose your life. So in a normal circumstance, you eat the treif for food. Safek pikuach nefesh is doche kashrus. So the Malbim suggests that there are actually a lot of indications that Daniel had bigger fish to fry, or thought he had bigger fish to fry here. Daniel thought that this wasn't just a matter of they have food and it happens to not be kosher. Asher Liyuz Gaal means Daniel saw this as they're trying to pull us into Avodah Zarah. As a matter of fact, in the previous pasuk, Vayasim lehem shara sarisim shemos. Right after they hear about the food, and then these boys get new names. Daniel's name is Belshazzar, which we're going to hear in a few prakim from now, was the name of a Babylonian Avodah Zarah. And Nebuchadnezzar later will crow about the fact that your name for my Avodah Zarah. So Daniel says, they're naming for their Avodah Zarah, they're trying to give me their tray for food, they're trying to pull me in to the Babylonian culture, to the Babylonian religion. So he says, Pas Bagamel, this is probably sacred food, sacred in their religion. They're trying to feed me a Avodah Zarah food. But Daniel says, Yargo Yavar. So he just goes straight to the Saras Harisim. He doesn't try to, negotiate with a low-level Meltzer. He goes straight to Saras Harisim. He says, you want me to eat Avodah Zarah food? I'm out. I'm Breiti Moser Nefesh. Asher Lo Yizkah, I don't want to be contaminated. And you would have expected Daniel was prepared for the Ashpenaz to take him outside and end his life. And he was ready to be Moser Nefesh, Akidosh Hashem, to avoid being sucked into Avodah Zarah. What he discovers from the conversation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does an ace, and Ashpenaz does not react that way. Ashpenaz then also, as you said, gives him insight, not only practical insight, but he realizes that it's not about Avodah Zarah. The king wants you to be healthy. The king wants you to be strong. The king wants you to become a part of his apparatus. But it's not about Avodah Zarah. And that's why Daniel then takes a different... Oh, it's just about... The food that they want us to eat happens to not be kosher. So now let's see if we can work with that. If the stakes aren't so high, so then let's see if practically we can convince someone to give us kosher food. Your issue is just you want me to be healthy? Okay, let's try a 10-day experiment. The king's only going to see me in 3 years. So 10 days? There's no risk. And the truth is, what the Malbim sees is specifically about Avodah Zarah, the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah sees more broadly, and this sort of brings it home a little more. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Hem, the Mishnah has a list of various foods that non-Jews produce, which we're not permitted to consume. A number of them are the ones that we associate as the Machalei Akum, whose rationale is to avoid, to create a barrier to over-socialization. Yein Akum and Bishol Akum, Mishnah talks about Shemen Akum. The Gemara tells us that these were all meant to be Mishum Ishos, Mishum Chasnas. They're meant to be barriers to too much free and easy socializing between Jews and non-Jews. So the... Gemara understands that Daflam Vavam and Aleph, that these psukim are the sort of the beginning of that story, the beginning of the concept of Machal Yakum, of Shemen Akum, and Tosas there says also Yein Akum and perhaps even Bishal Akum. It begins with Daniel's hesitation to eat this food. And it specifically Malbim sees Avodah Zarah, and Bigadol, it's all about avoiding, maintaining healthy boundaries, social boundaries between Jews and non-Jews. And it's remarkable because this had started, the irony is Nebuchadnezzar's plan had been, as the Malbim develops earlier, to sort of cultivate Jews who would fill different roles. Mizera HaMalucha, there'll be Jews who are going to move into a royal role. Imperial governors back in Eretz Yehuda, and there'll be Jews who will have other roles, and there'll be Jews who will be trained by the king, a part of Bavli culture, and they'll bring that back at different levels of society to the Jews. So the Malbim, the Nebuchadnezzar was planning to gradually assimilate Jewish society from top to bottom. Ironically, Daniel, this ends up becoming exactly the opposite. This story is the foundation for the concept of Machal Yakum, which represent part of our care, Adayom Hazeh, in maintaining healthy boundaries. And Juana, we only have a couple of moments left. I'm glad to hang around for questions afterwards. But just to sort of put this into perspective, it's early days yet. This is the first parak. The parak ends, ironically, but jumping ahead many years. But he's the very last pasuk of Perek Aleph. But we heard that Daniel was there from the very beginning of the Galus, from the first round of Galus Bavel, Yehoyakim, Yechanya, that the last pasuk of Perek Aleph already jumps to Vayhi Daniel ad shnas achas l'kor shamelach. Daniel is a man of Galus, as Rav Ariel points out. That's the introduction, is understand Daniel's, the entire story of Galus, Daniel is there from beginning, his entire life. From childhood until old age, he is the man of Galus. Not the man who's trying to avert Galus, not the man who's being misabel over the Galus. But he's the man who lives and operates and grows ambitiously in Galus. This parak is the first stage. He's a boy, and at this point no one's jealous of him. It's early days yet in the arc of Galus. And at this point, no, there's no jealousy. That's yet to come. There is already the concern. Everyone's very friendly. He's being brought into the heart of the empire. There are no barriers. What he's contending with is maintaining his own boundaries. And we're going to see, as the Pesukim already do say, that he's going to maintain boundaries and he's going to contribute. That's how the Pesukim end. At the end of the 3 years, Nebuchadnezzar assesses the group, and Daniel, Hanan, Mishael, Azariah, they're the top of the class. And they're the ones who are chosen to make significant intellectual contributions to the empire. So that's sort of like an early stage. They're making, as Jews would throughout the centuries, making intellectual, practical intellectual contributions to the empire. At this point, there isn't yet kina. They're in a Yosef type of role. But the story of Galus, the story of how to handle Galus successfully, has begun with this parak. We're going to see where it's going to take us in Mitzvah next week.